Hey, this is James from the Survival Punk Podcast.
And this is the co-host with the most couch potato like. How are you doing this week, sir?
Frustrated, ready for this week to be over. But we have a great interview coming up today.
Oh, God, yes. This is one I've been looking forward to for a pretty good while. It's a guy that thought I was funny as fuck, and I hope I feel the same way about him.
So, we got a chance to interview Dan Green from the Greening Out podcast, and, it was a, like most of our interviews, it was sort of rambling and wily and, hilarious and great, so I hope you guys will enjoy it.
Oh God, absolutely, and you know, this is actually our first interview from across the pond, is what they say over there.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
I'm trying to get another interview from way across the pond all the way to Australia. So
that's the other pond.
That's the other pond, yes.
Two ponds away.
Well, you know, if you go all the way, I mean, you could get there from the one pond. You just have to keep going and going and going.
Well, you see, they tried to avoid that before, and that's how they actually discovered what was on this side of this pond.
Right. Good old this side of the pond.
Yep. All Columbus and trying to shortcut to India. Of course, now historians believe that he may have known that wasn't a shortcut to India, but then why the hell would he come here? But we're getting off topic again. So we've got a great interview coming up with Dan Green from Scotland and the Greening Out podcast. But before we jump into that, we need to give special shout-outs to our sponsors. And let's just go through these, starting with our oldest and greatest, jmbullion.com.
Yes, jmbullion.com, the place where you should get all your gold and silver online, for monetary hedges, for, barter. I've actually used silver for barter, for other silver, which was awesome. And jmbullion has the best prices, free shipping on orders, all orders are over $100, so everything is free shipping, which is good. And, the best prices on the internet. So jmbullion.com, click the banner right hand margin.
Where you will also find CampingSurvival.com for all your bug-in and bug-out needs.
Yes. Everything you need from fish antibiotics to bug-out gear to the Life Straw, which me and Mike have tested on really badly pooed-in creek stream water, and we are alive to tell the tale.
Yeah, you tested a little bit more thoroughly than I did. I took a wee sip.
Yeah, which, it tasted fine, though. You're just paranoid. And the Life Straw filters everything out 99.999 repeating percent of bacteria and particles and viruses. So the Life Straw is a great prep to have in your bug-out bags and go bags. And you can find them in the right-hand margin on survivalpunk.com.
Where you will also find the great people from Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
Yes, which I am drinking. Sadly, the last few dregs of my morning coffee, pumpkin spice today for you that are interested. I'm tired, I'm sleepy, and the Mai Tai is going to help me make it through the day. On top of that, they're organic, they're fair trade, which means they pay their workers a fair wage to support their families, and they kick back a portion of the proceeds to help, an orphanage there in Thailand, feed, school, give medical attention, and housing two orphans in Thailand. So good people, good coffee, good world.
Yeah, they are helping out. Well, I mean, they're helping out orphans. They're helping out the local indigenous people there. And I just can't think of a better way to start your day.
Nope, me either.
With a cup of Mai Tai's Exotic Asian Coffee. So find it in the banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com. Right there near the little spot marked wellfoodco.com.
WorldFoodCo.com. Actually, I need to do something more for them to like push people through so they know about World Food Co. But they are the best place online to get organic, high quality paleo snacks. And we've talked about in the past before about how maybe paleo snacks aren't the best, but sometimes you need a treat. And if you're going to eat a treat, you might as well eat a good quality paleo one. They have grass-fed whey protein. What?
I said exactly.
Yeah.
I got your back, bro.
Yeah, grass-fed whey protein, the carne bars, which I think are amazing, the paleo MREs, which are
creators of the paleo MRE.
Creators of paleo MRE with the great Rob Wolf, John Wellborn, Rob Wolf co-created that, and it just tastes damn yummy. That's all I gotta say about it. So you can find them in the right hand margin of the survivalpunk.com homepage.
All right, but now coming right up is the host of the Greening Out podcast, our good friend Dan Green. So let's just jump right into it.
All right, today on the podcast we get to bring on my friend Dan Green from the Greening Out podcast. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Right. How's the weather over there been lately? What's the weather like?
Yeah, it's cold. It's not as cold as it usually is, but it's pretty cold. Cold wind, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not that cold outside, but you get that north wind.
Yeah, it's... I mean, me and Mike live in, like, the south of the United States, which is normally, like, nice and warm, and this has been the most brutal, wet winter we've had in, like, 15, 20 years.
Of course, then again, we also live in Middle Tennessee. The big joke about Middle Tennessee is... if you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes. It'll change. Yeah, the weather here is the most bipolar of any place in the world I've ever been.
Yeah. Oh, man, you'd like Scotland. Scotland has a bit of bipolar weather as well.
Nice. We should totally go on a world tour and visit, for sure.
I don't think I'm budgeted for a world tour quite yet.
I know.
You haven't paid me in like something like 50-something podcasts.
Yeah, I know. All right. So for our listeners that don't know who you are, Dan Green, who are you?
Yes, tell us a bit about yourself.
That's Canadians, man. I know, because my wife's originally one.
Sorry, wrong.
No, my name's Dan Green. I do the Greening Out podcast in Glasgow in Scotland with my wife, Katie. We are, as far as we know, the only libertarian podcast in Scotland, as far as we know. We also co-host on the Freedom Fiends radio show. We do that too. It's always fun. We're basically a kind of oddity in Scotland because, I mean, there's only like, really, there's like our podcast and then there's maybe a couple in England. And then that's about it for sort of libertarian media in the whole of the UK. So we were basically, I mean, I listened to a lot of podcasts. That's sort of how I really got into sort of like libertarianism and things like that. But I wanted one that was a bit closer to home, and it just didn't exist. So it's that case of this doesn't exist. So really, I'm just going to have to do it myself. It was one of those. So that's how we started it. And it's been doing well since. People seem to like it.
Now, I'm glad you actually answered our next question before we asked it. That really saves us a lot of time. I appreciate that. But I just got to know, because we get this question all the time. I'm just wondering how it goes over in the UK and Scotland and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Do you get asked what's a podcast a lot?
Oh, my God.
Actually, more of older people. I find, not to be ageist, but it's older people. Maybe I'll say to guys in work, I'll be like, yeah, I do a podcast. And they'll be like, I want now. You know, and you're like, it's like the radio, but on the internet and on demand. It's the kind of best way you can sort of describe it.
Yeah, I don't even tell people I do podcasts anymore. I tell people anytime I accidentally mention that I've got a show in front of somebody, you got a show? I'm like, yeah, I do an internet radio show.
Yeah.
I just save them the damn time.
Simpler, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
It's because it's such a new thing, you know, it's like it's not been around that long because... I mean, we don't really know how podcasting's going to go in the future because maybe at one time in like the 70s, people thought, well, records will go obsolete and stuff,
yeah.
And, you know, but now there's a whole subculture of people that collect records, you know, so who knows what will happen. Maybe there'll be a weird subculture of people that like listen to our podcasts years from now.
Oh my God! I almost started collecting records because of a zombie movie. Believe it or not.
What?
Shaun of the Dead. Warm Bodies.
Oh.
I wish it was Shaun of the Dead. Now that we actually have a Scotsman on, that's not like all zombified and shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you away with the fact that Simon Pegg and the rest of them are all English.
I'm not going to get it.
I hadn't mentioned it yet. So normally we begin all of our podcasts with the Ramones opening music. In honor of you being from Scotland and the UK, I'm going to switch it out to some Sex Pistols. But so we understand each other, the Ramones did invent punk music. The Sex Pistols were second.
Well, see, when you I actually would listen to the Ramones more than I listen to the Sex Pistols, but it's a whole different thing, because if you think about the Ramones, they kind of sounded like they heavily drew on like a 50s influence. You can kind of hear it in a lot of their stuff, and they were more about kind of the music really for me, but the Sex Pistols were more, it was a whole different thing. I mean, it was a whole kind of, it was a reaction to, what was going on at the time, so it was more of a political statement, although they were just using terms like fascist and anarchy all wrong, and actually did people like, who are serious anarchists harm by, shouting about it, because then everyone thinks of Johnny Rotten. And now Johnny Rotten or John Lydon is in butter commercials in the UK, so...
Oh my God.
Yeah, so there's your Mr. No Sellout.
Oh my God. To be honest, I actually... I'd use the Ramones music, but I'm not like the biggest Ramones fan. I actually love the Clash a lot more, except for the Clash. Like a lot of their stuff was just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's butter commercials. Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's something cool.
He's like a Scottish Fabio.
Oh God!
I can't believe it's not butter.
Oh my God! So in your daily life, how do you try to live an anarchist lifestyle or libertarian lifestyle?
See, it's funny. I didn't even know they had libertarians in Scotland.
I know. There's not many. We're like an endangered species. Actually, there's libertarian meetups, but I haven't actually been to any of them yet. I kind of think that maybe it's just so everyone gets together to make sure everyone's still alive. And then,
which is kind of weird, because you got to think, didn't William Wallace invent freedom? I mean, you're the home of freedom.
Dude, don't get me started in that film. We did an entire show in that movie, man. We did half a show, and then we got into talking about a Titanic conspiracy theory. It was a bit crazy, but there's so much wrong with Braveheart. It's just unreal, man.
Yeah.
Whoa, Titanic conspiracy theory.
Oh, yeah, have you never heard this? It's actually one of the most credible conspiracy theories I've ever heard, because I'm very skeptical. Do you want me to tell you?
Oh,
go ahead.
Yes.
Okay, so what the idea is this. There was a movie made about it. We did a show where we talked about it. There's a movie and a book. What they think happened was White Star Line, who owned the Titanic, also owned a ship called the Olympic. The two of them were nearly identical. There was a problem with insurance. So what they thought they would do is they would rebrand the Olympic, because it was an older ship, as the Titanic. And actually they showed how they could have paid off a few men to make a few changes to the side of the ship that would have made it so they switched the ships. And the idea was it was supposed to sink, and then there was a ship called, I think it was the Californian, that was close by. That was supposed to come, pick everyone up, and then White Star Line would cash in, catching insurance money, no problems. But... the problem was there was problems with radar. The Californian was in the wrong spot when the Titanic sank. So basically the theory is the Olympic sank. Now there is actually some photos that show some of the things that say Titanic, some of the letters hanging off. And you can see there's different words underneath that it could spell Olympic. So there's actually a lot of credible evidence as to how this could have been done, why it could have been done, and for what purpose.
Holy shit, I can't believe this.
It's a documentary. You can see it on YouTube. It's very, very cheesy the way it's done, but it's got good information. But I read a book about it as well. The book was called The Ship That Never Sank. I think it was by Robin or Roger Gardner.
I've got to leave 9/11 conspiracy theory behind.
Yeah, become the Titanic conspiracy.
Yeah, not great. Now I got to find a Titanic podcast and sound like a jackass on it.
Oh my God.
I'm a Titanic doctor.
Yeah, I've only ever been interviewed on one other podcast, and it was, Prepper Recon?
Prepper Recon, yeah.
Yeah, and he brought me on to talk about 9/11 conspiracy theory, and I was going to try to give it some, I was going to try to be serious, and go over all this, and I ended up sounding like a crackpot wackadoodle. I've never been able to listen to my own interview in its entirety to this day. I'm just so damn embarrassed by it.
I know what you mean. Sometimes you listen back to things and you go, man, what was I talking about? Sometimes I go on kind of tangents about things, and then I think, why did I start talking about that in the first place?
When, yeah, my problem is I start getting too excited about something. I start going, and guess what?
I've got that same problem as well. I had to learn to get away from the microphone when I get excited, because it used to be when I started, I would get excited way too close to the microphone and have all this terrible distorted audio. So I had to learn how to like talk here and then get excited way back there, so that my audio stays at kind of some decent level.
If you could see me while podcasting, like, you would see that when I get excited, like, I jump up and I stand in my chair and, like, crouch over the microphone and sort of, like, talk at it emphatically. That's when I'm excited. I'm like, yeah. I gotta stand in the chair.
He looks like he's about to lunge at it and fire the damn thing.
Too much excitement, man.
Yeah. Actually, I know if you listen to some of my early, like, podcast appearances, it was horrible. I sounded like I was Beavis and Butthead. I said like.
Oh, God. You turned a drinking game out of our ums.
Yeah.
No, I know, and I know exactly what you mean. So we started with one wee tiny mic that cost us like £10. So you're talking between $15 and $20 roughly. And it was just like this wee rubbish mic, and that's how we kind of got going. And we did it from like sitting in bed at first, just sort of passing this microphone to each other, and then we got like what we thought was a good USB mic. Like we thought this is a good thing. This is going to really work for us. Then Michael Dean got in touch with us a while later from the Freedom Fiends, and then he said, like, you know, I like your stuff, but your audio is terrible. And we were like, well, actually, I use worse words than that. He was like, it's fucking terrible. And we didn't even realize, and we bought this expensive microphone. He found the manual, because we had no manual with it. Somehow he found a manual, found out we were talking into the wrong end. It was the wrong kind of mic. And then he actually showed that we could buy two microphones £40 cheaper than this one we bought. Well, the one we bought was £80. Now we use two £20 microphones, and they sound a lot better than one £80 one. It just shows you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, you want to hear something horrible. For the longest time on this microphone, see, we have this recording software that we use, and we plug the microphone, this blue microphone, into our USB port. And for the longest time, we thought we were using this microphone, and it turns out we actually weren't, because you had to, like, get this little thing that actually selects this microphone. So we've been talking into an expensive-ass microphone that wasn't even really doing anything for, like, at least half a year.
Yeah, the laptop's built-in mic was recording, like, 20 podcasts in a row.
Yeah, it really did. And the only way we discovered it is one day we started recording a podcast, and about 10 minutes into it, James realized that he never even took the damn microphone out of his bag and plugged it in.
I was like, how are we recording?
Then we listened back to it. I'm like, it sounds the same as all of our other podcasts. Oh, my God, we haven't even had the damn thing running.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like when you start and you think, if I'd have actually just spent some time looking into this instead of just, I jump into things, do you know what I mean? And I don't really read as much as I should originally. I kind of am like, oh, I'll just learn as I go. And then about 50 mistakes later, I go, yeah, I could have done this a lot sooner.
Well, I find that I learn better by, like, doing it and messing up. Because I used to have sort of a crippling perfectionism problem where, like, me and Mike tried for, I think, 2 years to do a podcast, and we would record stuff, and I'm like, this fucking sucks, and I'd throw it all away.
Oh, God, it was horrible. I mean, we tried everything. And this was back during the days when I was not opposed to getting a little bit out of my mind on certain substances, so to speak. And I'm like Kevin Smith does all of his podcasts high, and they're great. Maybe I should try that. And then we'd get in the car, and I'd be halfway falling the fuck asleep.
Yeah.
Katie and I were in Amsterdam a while ago, and we were going to actually do a podcast from Amsterdam, and because we'd taken sort of like a portable recorder and a couple of mics and stuff, and then we immediately thought, let's not even bother. So we just enjoyed ourselves, and we just left that alone, because it would have been messy. Let's just put it that way.
We're kind of jumping ahead, because I had on the board, because I write, like, I've sort of pre-show everything out on a board, one of the questions is drug legalization, and we'll get to that. Me and Mike had kicked around the idea of doing a podcast on mushrooms to see like what kind of thought experiment that would be.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, for good reason. I'm not sure if it would go anywhere, but whatever.
Well, that's
You'd
the thing.
You'd be fucking that damn microphone the whole fucking time. I know you would. Like, oh, this feels so good, Mike, talking to the microphone. No, it's in your fucking pants.
Oh, my God.
There was a story I heard one time about, I think it was that band, the Meat Puppets. They inspired Nirvana, and they played with Nirvana, and like their unplugged gig, the two of them came on. And it was like one of them, I think his name was, it was either Kurt or Chris Kirkwood, their brothers, the two guys, and one of them was like, I'm going to take a load of acid before we do this, you know, recording session, because, you know, I'll be able to come up with these psychedelic guitar solos, I'll really get in the zone. And in actual fact, according to the story I heard, he actually spent like 4 hours hiding behind an amplifier, terrified, like crouching in the corner of the room. So this idea he had that somehow, you know, flowers and rainbows were going to flow out of his guitar, you know, and everything was just going to be mellow, man, just it didn't happen for him, funnily enough.
Oh my God.
Oh my word. Oh, that is awesome.
Don't take drugs, kids.
Yeah.
So you do not advocate the consumption of illegal narcotics of any type on the Survival Punk podcast or survivalpunk.com.
Well, we just did Katie and I, we did a show that was like an hour and 40 minutes roughly about Alice in Wonderland. And we went way too far into that book, man. Like, because we read the book, the two of us actually went right through it, because Katie, like, she collects them, and we, like, wrote down all these little notes and stuff, and how fucking insane the whole thing is, man. I mean, Lewis Carroll was fucked right up, and the whole thing's pretty crazy. And then there's all this weird stuff about some people think he was a paedophile that we didn't even know about, man. He was almost like a sort of Victorian Michael Jackson, if you know what I mean, because there's all these kind of weird stories that float about him, and it's really weird.
Yeah, basically, Alice was like his boss's daughter at the university or something like that. Lewis Carroll loved all children as long as they were little girls, basically. Mm-hmm. And his boss's daughter was named Alice, and he had a special relationship with her.
Oh, God.
That after a while, his boss wouldn't let him anywhere near her anymore.
Yeah, weird, man. Crazy when he actually used to draw, like, pictures of, like, naked girls and stuff, and, like, take photographs of little girls. But then there's this weird counter-argument that some people say that during Victorian times, it was like, that was a kind of normal thing. That was like a Victorian thing, that even pictures of like semi-naked children appeared on Christmas cards, apparently, according to some of the sources I've read during those times. So some people argue that it's a misunderstanding of a cultural difference, because a lot of it's taken from his diaries as well. And he definitely did have that relationship with that girl Alice, because that's how he built Alice in Wonderland, by telling her stories, actually on a boat, which was really weird for some reason. It just gets weirder. But so he was telling Alice stories on a boat, right? So that's where we're at. And yeah, I know. So apparently that was some people say that was a normal thing. Some people also say that because this was taken from his diaries, when he referred to, you know, like girls, like little girls, some people think that some of them were between like 18 and 22, so that it's a misunderstanding. But there's two sides. I mean, it's one of those things that we're never ever going to know, like who Jack the Ripper was, but it's not the same quite, but you know, it's one of those things that we won't be able to ever determine it. But it's so interesting to read about, because it's so weird, and the book is just insane as well.
That's one of my greatest dreams. Like, if I had a time machine, I would go back and just like learn the secret to all these mysteries in history.
Okay, I can't just live for with myself. I can't live with the guilt anymore. I'm Jack the Ripper.
I knew it. I suspect. I always suspected that my theory was rejected.
I was on mushrooms, jumping the TARDIS, and wound up killing a bunch of hookers in Victorian London. So
I was watching a Jack the Ripper special one time, and it was weird. They're like, when the Jack the Ripper murders stopped in England, a series of like copycat murders happened like in America, like starting in New York and then like heading on like a road trip down south. And
yeah,
I'm like,
I think I saw that same special.
Yeah. So they're like, one of the main suspects escaped from a mental asylum, hopped on a boat, came to New York, and then the murder started. So it was kind of like, maybe that was him.
That was a hell of a boat trip, too.
Yeah, it's weird, man. There's a British show called Goodnight Sweetheart, and it was just this comedy. It was this kind of famous British actor Nicholas Lyndhurst was in it, and the whole idea was he found a passage in London that went back to the East End of London during the war, and the first series starts at the start of the war, and then eventually he buys, as you would imagine, right, he buys a war memorabilia shop that leads back to where his time portal is, so obviously he can go and just buy things for practically no money and then sell them for a fortune. But there's one when, for some reason, the time portal works weird and he ends up in way further back than he's used to, and he meets Jack the Ripper. And what happens is Jack the Ripper accidentally finds his time portal, runs into his shop, runs out the road, and gets run over by a bus. So presenting the theory that Jack the Ripper somehow got into the 90s and got run over by a bus, and that's why the killing suddenly stopped.
Oh my god.
How's that for a theory?
Wow. I'm going to have to... What's the name of that show?
Goodnight, Sweetheart.
Goodnight, Sweetheart. I'm going to have to find that.
Yeah,
we're kind of like British TV junkies. It's terrible.
Do you know Only Fools and Horses, then?
No.
That show, right, because that's constantly voted like one of the best British sitcoms ever. I don't think it is, but he was in that show, so I didn't know if you knew that show. It's an older show.
What was it? Mike, write this down.
That's an old show. It's called Only Fools and Horses. It was all right. I mean, I watched some of it.
Only Fools and Horses?
Yeah. He was in that, man. If we're going to start talking about weird British TV, we could be here tonight, though.
I'm kind of up in a roar right now that Jeremy Clarkson was suspended from Top Gear. I'm like, they need to bring him back, because... the show won't be worth the shit without him.
Oh god, I don't have TV. I'm one of those guys, and I don't know why, but like, my brother and that kind of likes Jeremy Clarkson, but he's always sort of annoyed me. I don't know why. I think he's just over cocky.
And he's an asshole. I mean, he really is.
But he's not ashamed about it, which is, I think if you looked up to him and said you're an arsehole, he'd probably say, well, yeah, I am. You know, I think he'd pretty much agree to it. So fair play.
See, and I love Top Gear. It's proof to me that there are rich rednecks in the UK. They are British rednecks with a hell of a lot of money to spend on cars.
Yeah, that they could just ruin. One time that I remember, they drove a Range Rover up a mountain and just left it there. Like they got like a helicopter or something back down. They just left it there. Because there's something in a paper or something that said there's a free Range Rover up in a mountain if you want it.
Oh, my nice. God. Still my favorite episode of all time is, like, season 15. It was the Reliant Robin episode. Showed Jeremy Clarkson trying to make a death-defying 14-mile trip across the UK.
Was that in the three-wheeled car? Was that the old three-wheeled car?
Yeah, the Reliant.
And it kept tipping over.
Yeah, he drove it 20 feet, made the first turn, and was on his damn side.
I didn't actually see that. Actually, that show I was talking about, Only Fools and Horses, they have one of those cars as their, like, business van, which is quite funny.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there was one of them on Mr. Bean. I love Mr. Bean. He was constantly fucking with this powder blue Reliant Robin. Anytime you'd see it, he was inevitably going to cause it to tip over.
Yeah. Mr. Bean was great. It's one of those comedies, because there was pretty much no speaking. You could just, like, anyone could watch it. You could not know a word of English and totally get it.
Mm-hmm. Rowan Atkinson has a face built for comedy.
Oh, man, he did a live show, and it was like, it was in somewhere, I think it was in America, it was in like Massachusetts or something, it was like in the 80s, and it was like a one-man show, although he did kind of get, every now and then this guy Angus Deaton, this British comedian, came on to help him with stuff, but it was mostly just him doing sketches by himself, and it was amazing. It was so funny.
I know, I've seen that.
Have you seen it?
I've seen that one-man show. I know exactly what you're talking
so
about.
So funny, and it's like, there's one where he's a waiter, so it's just him on stage, and he's imagining, so you're supposed to imagine there's a whole group of, like, drunken English idiots Indian restaurant, and he's the waiter, but he totally makes you believe it, even though it's just him. It's like such a talent the man's got.
I think part of that, he was playing Satan and sorting everybody out in the afterlife.
Oh, wow.
yeah, that's how it starts. Yeah, that's how it kicks off. That's brilliant. It's so funny.
Oh, my God. It was something like rapists on the right, murderers, you next to them, lawyers over here.
And then there was something like the French.
The French.
I think he said something like that, so...
It's funny, because for the longest time, he held, like, the top time on the board on Top Gear.
Oh, yeah.
He only got beat up by Matt LeBlanc.
Really?
Yeah, it's back when they had the Kia C apostrophe D as their reasonably priced car.
Which is the like the UK version of my little hatchback car.
Yeah, he has the same car. He wants to rip the Kia Rio 5
off.
He wants to rip the Rio 5 off of it and get the badge that says C'D on it.
Why not, man? I remember, because it used to be on when, like, I remember it kind of growing up and stuff, because my brothers used to watch it and things like that. So I do kind of remember it growing up, but I never ever liked Jeremy Clarkson. Even though some people talk about, like, he's pro-gun, apparently. I've never heard him say it, but apparently.
That's one of the things that got me on the Jeremy Clarkson, was, like, he had this, like, massive fight with, do you know who Piers Morgan is?
Oh, God, I wish I didn't, but I do.
Yeah, yeah. He was ripping him like seven new assholes. Just he was like, because yeah, I mean, I've seen Jeremy Clarkson shoot guns often, which I guess when you're famous in the UK, you sort of get some leeway to like, you know, play with guns.
But not everyone, by the way. See that band? Sorry, not Clinton, but that band One Direction, that awful pop band. When they were touring America, one of them took a picture and put it on Instagram or something of him shooting a gun, and see the horrendous abuse he got in the British gutter press. It was ridiculous. Oh, just for that, we're in a place where guns were legal. But sorry, James, go on.
No, that's pretty much all I had to say. I got some more serious questions. That reminds me. So, what are the gun laws like there in Scotland? Like, I've heard it's like, can you own like a single shot shotgun, maybe?
Now, you can own certain guns. You know what the thing is? I don't know people, but I sometimes deliver packages to a gun shop. There's very few of them, but I know where one is. But I've never really kind of talked to the guys in there. But it's very, very difficult. I mean, you have to like join a shooting club, and then you have to. The only reason I don't have a gun is because there's all these hurdles you would need to jump first.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't want that much focus on me, to be fair. It's kind of creepy. Gotcha. There's so many hurdles. But it's not like it's difficult for criminals to get one. I mean,
well, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I've been offered a gun by someone. Someone offered me a gun, allegedly, apparently. But you can get guns pretty cheaply, illegally. I didn't buy one. I'll tell you why, right? Someone said to me, I can get you a gun if you want a gun, right? Because they knew it was what I was into. And I said, no, because I don't know how to use it. I blow my hand off and I'm not getting into this. I'm, you know, not interested. But the thing is, right, then I found out later from someone else that the guns are fairly cheap here, but ammunition is an absolute fortune because it's all black market.
Right.
I can imagine, yeah.
I was going to say, the handgun that I own, I bought from a police officer, no paperwork.
Oh, man.
In, like, the police precinct parking lot. Like, he opened up out of his cruiser, handed me, like, this like, you know, convenience store sack with a gun inside of it, and I had a wad of cash.
Oh my!
Yeah, no records, and it was the best ever. Like,
that's crazy.
It was hilarious.
Here's your gun, James. Now give me back those damn pictures.
Yeah.
See, that would never happen here. Even the police here aren't routinely armed. There was a kick up recently here because they've been sending out more armed officers, because your average policeman here is not armed. Because, well, I think that's only fair play, to be fair, because if they're not armed, then if we're not armed, then they shouldn't be. But, like, they've been sending a lot more armed officers out on the streets and stuff. The only place in Britain where police are, like, routinely armed is, like, Northern Ireland, but obviously Northern Ireland's got its own.
Yeah.
You kind of understand that, you know, they're dealing with a different set of problems over there.
Yeah. So, to kind of get things back on track, yeah. I got a question that I think you have some insight on.
Okay.
So let's talk about the Scottish vote for independence, and you know, what do you think about it, and what was sort of legit and what was, you know, junk about it.
Have you got 4 hours? No, this is a topic I do know a lot about, and I did a lot of work about. Like, I wrote a lot of things about it and ranted a lot on my podcast and whatnot. The whole idea was, what I was trying to explain to a lot of American people I was talking to was, this secession kind of idea here is more of a left-wing movement, because the main parties that were behind, political parties that were behind the Scottish secession movement, were the Scottish National Party, who are a left-wing social democrat party, the Scottish Green Party, no explanation needed, the Scottish Socialist Party, no explanation needed. You can see that it's, you know, it's a very left-wing phenomenon, and I went back and forth on it because, like, I thought, well, you know, is it a good thing just to have some smaller government? But then if this goes all kind of weird, and because it was looked like it was going to get more socialist, because in all the pro-yes propaganda that was coming out, it was really, really heavy on, like, it was heavy on stuff like social justice, which to me is a vague term. I wrote in one of my articles, you know, something called social justice. You know, what the fuck does that mean? I mean, it's just a vague term. It could mean anything. It means different things to different people. And it was full of shite. And I wrote about how both sides were full of shite, because they were. I eventually did vote on that. I don't vote on political things. It was just on that. And I did vote yes eventually. I'm quite happy to admit that. I've said that anyway before. But, you know, it's like, I couldn't understand. There was like a campaign called the Radical Independence Campaign. And it was basically, if you read their website, they were saying, look, for years and years in Britain, government has been the problem. So how are we going to fix this? By having much more government. You know, and that's basically what it was. It's like, we need more welfare, we need more of this, we need more of that, we need more free shit. And, you know, without anyone actually saying. And then the thing was as well, there's oil off the North Sea up by Aberdeen. And a lot of people that were pro-yes seemed to think that the oil ferry was going to make us all rich, you know, and then the oil prices crashed later on because they were talking about, no, it's fine, man, we'll just vote for it, and then all this oil money and we'll all be rich and shit. And you were like, well, look at all these countries like in the Middle East where they have lots of oil and the ordinary people aren't rich. And they're like, no, it's different here, it's different here. And how the fuck is it different here? It's not. It's the same shite because we have politics, you know. And I kept trying to explain to a lot of people, you know, and I got really angry about it. I was like, man, why don't we push for independence? But, and there was people, it wasn't just me, there was people doing it. I think one of the people was this guy David Farrer was doing it as well. There was a lot of people, there was a few people, a few is best, you know, trying to float the idea of, you know, remember people like economists like Adam Smith and philosophers like David Hume from Scotland, man, and grow some fucking individual liberty and backbone, you know. And that was the problem, because we were getting presented with a vision of a socialist independent Scotland, basically, for whichever way you look at it. And it was kind of hard to make this choice, especially being a libertarian, because it seemed like there was no libertarian option. But in the end, we just had to say, look, secession and a smaller government would be good. Then maybe, then I kind of, I think I wrote an article and it was called something like, we must let Scottish socialism fail, because I finally came to the conclusion that if we have a yes vote, and it does go kind of overtly socialist for a while, that'll fall in its arse, and then maybe we might have a chance, you know, to have a better, less socialist Scotland with more individual liberty. But it went no, and a lot of people said, I mean, there's all these kind of conspiracy theories and talks of vote rigging and stuff, and I talked to a lot of pro-yes people before, and they said to me, they were like, it will never be allowed to happen, is what they said, even though they were firmly voting for yes. But I'll tell you one thing good that really came out of it. A lot, I've never, ever, ever seen people in this country as engaged as they were. I mean, my wife even saw a guy who was just sitting with a table, and not one of the best, one of the not so good parts of the city, let's just put it that way. It was sitting with a table, I think it was two people, and they said, Scottish independence referendum, yes or no, let's have a chat. And they had a couple of empty seats, and, you know, and there was all this stuff going on, like people doing rallies and stuff. And it was really interesting to see people getting actually engaged with real issues. I just wish that they'd actually picked up a book on economics first.
Right. That's sort of like along the lines of what I'm thinking here in the United States. Like, I've really, and it's so like against what my brain tells me, but I've been wanting to push people into being like Democrats and vote like socialist everything just to wreck the boat quicker and start over. I mean, it's kind of, I don't think there's any like help any other way besides to just like drive off the cliff, blow this motherfucker up, and then, okay, we start from scraps now.
Your idea of putting out a house fire is to blow up the block.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, but I mean, but didn't we see it in the Soviet Union, didn't we? What happened, man, it was starting, the system was rotting from within, and then everyone disengaged with it, and it fell apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it there was definitely some suck they had to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but it's, I mean, there's no fixing it. You can't, like, I mean, you can't slap scaffolding on it and fix it. It needs to crash and then be rebuilt.
Yeah, they're doing it wrong.
That's the thing. I mean, we have seen a lot of non-violent revolutions. We've seen, you know, loads of them in history, and the violent ones are always the ones you want to watch out for, because what generally happens is the intellectuals that were behind it in the first place end up being the first ones to be shot in the back of the head while the thugs take over. How many times have we seen that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So next,
I got a bit sad there. We were laughing, and we got into the Soviet Union. The people getting shot all of a sudden.
People in the head.
It's just not. It's a. You were talking bipolar earlier. This is like a bipolar sort of podcast.
Yeah, yeah. It's. Well, I'm actually having a lot of fun.
You know, I'm really like interviewing Dan Green. He is funny as fucking fuck. I just gotta tell you.
I said the same thing about you. To James earlier. Well, not earlier, but like when James was on our podcast before.
Yeah.
It's a good show too. See, I'll plug my own podcast whenever I can. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Which is, I love how you own my name on YouTube. If you search James Burnett, your podcast with me shows up on YouTube. You own that.
So do you know, James, that's the magic of good tags and good SEO. So yeah. That is.
I'm weird. Like, if you look for Survival Punk, one of the top results is some fucking Minecraft video. Murder that idiot.
I know. I got on there, I'm like, Survival Punk. That is Minecraft.
Yeah. They're everywhere. Fucking Minecraft.
I don't even understand Minecraft, but see, when we started our podcast, it's funny you mentioned that. We were talking about Amsterdam. It's nothing to do with Minecraft. We're talking about Amsterdam, but it's like names, and we called it greening out because greening out's, I think it's originally an Australian term, and it's when you smoke too much weed and you start freaking the fuck out. And we talk a lot about not freaking out, you know, once you see what's going on in the world in our podcast. And because our second name's Green, we thought that would be funny. But, like, if you search Greening Out, a lot of the time on YouTube or on Google, you will sometimes get our podcast. But a lot of the time you get, you know, videos of people hitting bongs way too hard and then, like, staring at walls and things like this.
Yeah. Speaking of drugs.
Oh, I might drugs. Shot right here. Yeah. That wallaby's fucking me wife. Oh, my God.
So the next topic I have is drug legalization, which we've actually, like, so to me, one of the symbols for freedom here in the United States I tend to think of is marijuana legalization.
You,
like,
just have to talk about marijuana on every single
every podcast.
We are trying to run a good, wholesome, badly podcast, and you keep fucking our shit up.
I'm trying to green out right here. So yeah, we're actually making some progress. So what are your thoughts on drug legalization? I mean, obviously you said you went to Amsterdam and you named your podcast Greening Out.
Yeah. You know, I wrote an article one time called Legalize All Drugs, but it really should be called Decriminalize All Drugs, really.
Yes.
Because the decriminalization model actually kind of works better. I don't know, because I haven't been to America in 2 years. But I've heard in places like Colorado and that some people are getting it from dealers still, like as an illegal dealers, because the taxes are pushing it too high. In Amsterdam, it's interesting because it's a kind of a grey area between the sort of, like, the police have this sort of, it's kind of decriminalised. It's not so much legal, but it's not so much illegal. But there is some, there's like some regulations, and they have been tightening them up lately. But the police, for example, they tend to not ask who the person's supplier is, you know, and things like that. There's certain questions that won't be asked. And the whole fact of the matter is, and, you know, I've said this before, and if you can imagine, I mean, look, it's a slippery slope argument and a logical fallacy to say if we decriminalize all drugs tomorrow, that, you know, everyone, their granny and their dog will be lying in the street with a needle hanging out their arm. You know, that's just stupid nonsense. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes people die of, like, I see people dying of bad ecstasy and things like that, and I've seen that in my life with people I've known of that have died of that. Can you imagine if a company, like a proper company that was public, that everyone knew, sold a bunch of bad ecstasy that killed about, say, 10 people? Man, they'd be lucky. They'd be facing, like, a big charge. They'd be lucky to get out of their office without being lynched by all the angry people outside. But because it's black market, we've got all these people who can cut it with anything they like, anything as harmful as they like, and it doesn't matter to them because they don't care, because it's never going to be traced back to them. And Walter Block proved in his book Defending the Undefendable that heroin is so expensive because the price is inflated because of the illegality of it. But if you made it legal, the doses would be so much cheaper, and because the doses would be so much cheaper, you would have less crime because people would have less trouble, you know, actually buying it because the prices wouldn't be so inflated.
Yeah.
I was about to say you'd have less crime because you'd have less people with the ability to still stand up.
And my thing is, a lot of the more dangerous drugs, wouldn't really exist because people could get, you know, high quality, more legit drugs. Like, you know, they could get the heroin instead of taking, like, you know, bath salts or something ridiculous.
Yeah, oh, exactly. I mean, bath salts and all this kind of crap has become these so-called legal highs here that are always in the news. It's just, I mean, a lot of it's just like plant food and things like that. And
yeah.
It's really bad for you, man. I mean, like, for example, when we went to Amsterdam and stuff, and you look at menus and things, and they have things like organic kush and stuff like that. You know, there's all these kind of options. But if you're to buy weed here off someone, unless you know someone good, you know, or that can get things, you know, you're going to get some crap, especially if you get something like that's like hash or something that, I mean, weed, you can't really cut a bit of bud of weed with anything but hash, like compressed hash. There could be anything in that. And I've heard of tales of like things that have been caught and analyzed, like shoe polish and animal crap and stuff like that in it, because, you know, who gives a fuck? Well, they don't give a fuck, man, you know, because they don't have, that's the thing, it's like the government in a way, because the government can give you, like, our, we've got a National Health Service, they can give us whatever crap service they want, because it doesn't matter, because fuck you, this is all that's available. That's it. That's basically it. And it's the same with illegal drugs. It's like, fuck you, where are you going to get pure cocaine? You're not going to get it anywhere. You're going to buy my 50-50 cocaine, and you're going to buy a lot of it from me. You know, and that's it.
Oh my God, I knew this guy back in the day, during my homeless days. He almost got his ass murdered by a bunch of guys in the ghetto. He had basically taken a bar of soap, cut it down into little crack rocks, coated it in ambisol, and sold them for $20 a piece.
Fuck.
Yeah, he almost got his ass myrtleized.
There was actually a recent story here about a guy who'd gone into jail, and he got arrested, and he'd instructed someone to bury all his heroin in his back garden. And that would be like his nest egg when he got out of jail. So no, this is totally true, man. I swear to God, right? So he gets out of jail and he digs up the heroin, right? But there's some bacteria that infected it that's found in soil, and he sells all this heroin, and then all of a sudden, all these junkies are in hospital and stuff like that, and there's a big epidemic among the heroin users in Glasgow, and that's all because of something that he wouldn't have thought even. You know what I mean? Like, but because that bacteria in the soil infected the heroin, and then suddenly you've got all these people that are, you know, in hospital, which wouldn't happen if there wasn't this, you know, insane prohibition, because it's a victimless crime. I mean, if I go to the park with my dog and I smoke a joint, I'm not destroying society. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, do you know that here we're not allowed to, like, drink alcohol openly and, like, outside? We can't do that. I can't walk. I can't go to the park with an open beer. If a policeman sees me, he'll make me pour it out or write me a ticket.
I thought you guys were more lenient over there. Like, it
used to be
a lot. Yeah. I know here it's pretty strict. Like, no open containers in public in our state. Year before last, I visited New Orleans for Mardi Gras. They're a bit more laid back about it. It's open containers everywhere, but they can't be glass and.
Well, that's New Orleans during Mardi Gras.
Yeah. So they don't really care too much. I remember hearing, I don't know, several years ago, the UK passed a law saying you could not pee in the streets anymore. And I'm like, you need a law for that? That's a thing?
It is now illegal to pee in the streets.
Oh, no, you get fined £80. Some places, actually, what they do is, I swear to God, I'm not joking, that some places in England, I actually saw this on a news report one time, they actually, if the police catch you peeing on the street, say you've been out and you're a bit pissed and you have a pee in the street, what they do is the police wait, they make you wait there, and they phone a guy from the local council, so your sort of local city council, and he comes with a mop and a bucket. And the police make you mop it up while they watch you, and then you give the guy the mop and the bucket back, and they let you go without a fine. And so,
oh, you see, now that's the way to fucking do it.
Yeah, it's kind of been, I like that.
That's the way to fucking do it.
I would rather that to a fight, to be fair. See, if someone handed me a mop and said, just clean it, I'd be like, no bother, man, that's cool. But, like, what are you supposed to do? Right? Are you supposed to piss yourself? I mean, you're supposed to seriously walk down the street and piss yourself when you could duck in an alley and have a piss? I mean, really, is that where we're at?
Actually, making it illegal to piss in the street. That's like making a law that says it's illegal to jump the fence at the zoo and fuck the zebra.
I don't imagine.
I mean, that's sort of the great thing about being a man, is you can pretty much pee anywhere, anytime.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Amen.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
How did we get on to pee?
I've drunk 2 bottles of water while sitting here. Can we change the subject, please? Oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
or get make it, use one of the empty bottles, Mike.
Yes, and I'm going to make James hold the damn thing for me. Yeah,
I'm not shaking it off, man.
Oh, that's why we have the producer. Oh, yes, and by the way, we have producer Mike's wife in the room with us. Say hi.
Hi.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that Andrew? We were hoping Katie would be on air so they could chat and stuff.
Oh, man, Katie's actually not here. She's out. She was actually a bit gutted because she would have been kind of hanging about if she was here, but it's someone in her work's night. It's her birthday or something, so Katie's not actually around, unfortunately. My better half.
Yeah. So next, I you know, browsing around your site, I noticed that you are into metal music.
I am.
It seems like certain forms of music lend themselves to freedom mm-hmm. more easily than others. Punk music, which is, you know, what I'm sort of into, can go either way. There's some, like, super leftist punks, and there's some, like, really anarchist punks. But metal seems pretty cool about, you know, libertarian anarchy, like, do what you want, you know, just don't punch me in the face and, you know, whatever.
I know what you mean. My kind of thing is, I like metal. I like some American metal bands, but I like mostly European ones. That's kind of what I've been inspired by when I was younger, you know. There have been a lot of great bands coming out of the US as well, but I like black metal, which is a really, really obscure form of metal music, and I went so far as to write a rather lengthy article and do an entire podcast and then a Freedom Fiend show talking about it, because it was such a weird and it's so extreme that, for example, like, there's a great documentary called, I think it's Until or Before the Light Takes Us, one of the two, and it's about, like, a lot of these black metal bands that were in Norway in the early 90s, and they had all this weird political stuff behind what they were doing, and a lot of it was to do with, like, they were angry about the Christianization of Europe, so they would use a lot of maybe satanic imagery and things like that, but they weren't really Satanists. If anything, they were more interested in the sort of pre-Christian European religion, and you would get that eventually, that used to exist, and they were angry about the sort of Christianization and the sort of deletion, as they saw it, of their culture, their previous culture. But what's interesting about these bands, if you take the big ones, there was a band called Mayhem, and, for example, one of the lead singers killed himself. He was a guy called Dead. He called himself Dead, and he used to bury his clothes before gigs, and then he would dig them up and put them on. And he was the first one to wear all that crazy corpse paint in his face and stuff, and he actually acted like he was a dead person. People said he was really withdrawn. So he killed himself, and then you had this thing with this band where this guy, where the guy was playing bass for a while, killed the guitarist and went to jail for 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and then there was all these church burnings that were attributed to them, because there was, like, certain, like, the guy that killed the guitarist said, like, I wasn't involved in the church burnings, but I did support them, you know. totally, because the way they justified it was they saw it was, like, taking back their land, because these churches were built over pre-Christian, what you might call pagan. I sort of prefer the term heathen. Sort of heathen sites. So they were really, and when you listen to black metal, it's probably the hardest type of music to listen to, because it's so raw and so aggressive. And they actually, even though you can't hear the lyrics, they put a lot of time in the lyrics. A lot of the lyrics are really good. They actually, even though, like, you hear this kind of, like, rah, it's almost like I always think of, because they're so angry about this past that they know that was here once, that got deleted, and we're not even allowed to know whether it was good or bad, because all the records are either burned or Christianized. And it's almost like, for me, like, they're shouting back from the past at us, you know, the way they do it. And especially when the guy said, called himself Dead, that really struck a big chord with me, because the whole thing with them was, it was like, this is a dead culture we live in. It's a dead consumerist culture that we don't care about. We, you know, we've been robbed of something that used to be ours, and now we don't even know what that is, and we're just stuck. I'm not saying I agree with all the views, because some of these people went really, really bad places, and some of them went down that National Socialist route, and you do not want to go down that route, because we know where that fucking leads. So some of them have gone down that route, which is very unfortunate, but that's what's so interesting about it, because to some people, they would just casually might hear it, and it might just sound like this noise, these weird Norwegian crazy bastards. But the actual fact is there's so much philosophy and substance behind it, and it sounds like Northern Europe, and I've said this before, because this really sounds to people like I'm being overdramatic, but fuck it. It's just the thing that, like, it actually, like, because there is a sort of bleakness up here, you know, there's a general Northern European bleakness, you know, and that really captures it in black metal music for me completely.
Nice. I kind of got into like a little metal, a little like you know, death metal in my you know, what was it, high school years. I got into one band.
Gwar, with the costume,
and that was awesome. I'm not gonna lie.
You know, I gotta say before we go any further, I would have hated to have been that poor bastard that found dead after he killed himself. I'm just like, God, he is really into character.
Well, do you know what happened? After that, I could add in a more fucked up detail after that. The guy that later got killed, when he found dead had blown his brains out. When he found dead, he took pictures of him and rearranged things, and then a picture of dead with his an actual picture of dead with his brains blown out appeared on Dawn of the Black Hearts, which was one of their bootleg live albums.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Yep, that's how extreme that scene was. The most extreme musical scene I have ever come across in my life. Some people think that punk's extreme. Black metal is by far and away the most extreme musical scene I've ever come across.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Now, what were you about to say before I saw Screwed Up Libri interrupted that?
I remember one band I used to dig because they, I really like sort of like hard driving guitars and stuff, and Dimmu Borgir, which I'm sure was European.
Yeah.
They were good. I had a bunch of their albums.
You say Demon Burger?
Dimmu Borgir.
Dimmu Borgir.
Yeah. Well, say it again.
Dimmu Borgir.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure
I don't have the right accent for it.
I'm sure that's good. How you... They're from Norway as well. They're another one of those. Yeah. But they came later. Like, the original sort of bands at the time were like Burzum, Mayhem, and Dark Throne. They were the sort of original bands around. There was also bands like Immortal were sort of around at the time, and Gorgoroth and things like that. But yeah, Dimmu Borgir were part of that. They were from Oslo as well. And they were, I think it was, they were in the early 90s as well. So it was around about that time that the scene was really taking off.
Yeah. It's. I also got to admit, like, you know, black metal, death metal had the best album covers of anything. Like, you go through the record store and you just look, and it's like, whatever has the most cool, like, demon tearing souls apart, that's the album to buy.
And the most incomprehensible logos.
Yeah.
Like fucking zombie, Rob Zombie, White Zombie.
Yeah, I love Rob.
I've seen him live.
I hate you. I'm a big Rob Zombie fan, and I have not had a chance to see him, because even though I live basically in Nashville, which is Music City, we don't ever get anyone good here.
Really?
Yeah.
They might as well just call it Country Music City.
Pretty much. I've seen Flogging Molly. Flogging Molly fan.
Yeah.
Except for their politics, because they're jackasses.
Yeah.
But yeah, their music's so good.
And it's only one Irish guy as well, which is the funny thing about that.
Yeah,
the rest of them are American. It's like the only singer's actually Irish.
You kept calling them an Irish punk band to me, and only one of them's Irish?
Dave is Irish.
I've seen them like 3 times and at clubs here, and every time I've left with bruises.
Yes.
Every time. But then sometimes, like, it's like they're playing, like, a fast song and, like, everyone's all over you and they're all in about it. And then they'll play something slower, and then the guy that was just, that you know, caused all the bruises that are down your arm has now got his arm around you. You know, and you're swaying together and things like that. It's like kind of a weird atmosphere, but it's always great when they play.
That's exactly how it is.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere, and this is kind of off topic, but not really off topic, I read a quote that men can only understand each other through their fists, and from like concerts and stuff, I kind of agree with that. Like, it's just something like primal and manly. Like, you just gotta punch each other sometimes.
I know you mean.
Of course, you are talking to a guy who pretty much believes that the script for Fight Club is a Bible.
It's
Do you care to elaborate?
I just really think that, like, you know, men have been sort of demonized over the past couple of decades. And, you know, it's...
Emasculated.
You know, emasculated. We're generations of men that have been raised by women that have been raised by women. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know about Scotland, but, you know, 90% of your teachers you have in school are women. So you're taught from, you know, birth, basically, to respect women. And there's just not like a strong positive male culture that much. I mean, you know, it's
I understand what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, you know, men just gotta punch each other sometimes and be men.
Because that's the thing, how many times do we see it? I mean, take the stuff like, you know, how many times on TV do we see the idiot father, you know, Family Guy, The Simpsons? Yeah. How many, you know, Al Bundy from Married with Children, how many could we pick out? You know, and it almost, you know, like, not to put my tinfoil hat on, although it seems to be on. The thing is, like, you kind of wonder, is that a plan? You know, because on TV a lot you see, it seems very adversarial between men and women, like we just can't get each other, you know, we just won't understand each other, and that's it, we're so different, and all this kind of shit. But I don't really believe that, because that's not what I've found, for example, in my relationships. And but I do see a lot of this whole thing. I know what you mean. It's like, instead of, like, us confronting our neighbours, we phone the police, so it's like we just outsource our violence to someone else. Like, let's outsource our violence to the government, because we're not going to do it ourselves, you know. And it's rubbish, but I understand exactly what you mean. And I think it's been drilled into us, because I see a lot of young men that act like morons. Even I know young men who have children who act like their kids themselves. And I'm like, man, you might only be 24 or whatever, you know, and you're still young, but like, you have to grow up, you know, like, because they think it's normal to be an immature asshole because they see it on TV and they think that's funny and that's cool, you know. And, you know, we can have a laugh and stuff like that. I'm not saying we need to all be fucking brutal. But the point of the matter is, like, it's just, it seems like it almost is drilled into men to just, you know, to be, like, emasculated and to act like fucking morons, and, like, that's what we do.
Yeah.
American TV, the only thing it's ever taught me... If you're a big fat idiot, you can land yourself a smoking hot sassy one.
Well said.
Think about that dynamic. Every big fat idiot.
Yeah.
All the idiots, the big fat ones on TV, they end up with some tiny little skinny wife that's got a sassy attitude.
Well said, man. Absolutely true. Yeah.
King of Queens. Family Guy. Yeah. All the way back to the Honeymooners.
Yeah.
yeah. Absolutely, actually. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I actually need to move, like, next to you over to Ireland, where I could get me a ginger finally.
Yeah, I've saw you. You post a lot.
There's more gingers in Scotland than there are in Ireland.
Oh, well, prepare the guest room. I'm on my way.
Now, James, I'm sorry to disappoint you. Both my brothers are ginger, and I don't have a sister, so I'm very sorry to disappoint you.
That's okay. James is not that damn picky. Yeah.
He'll take whatever. Now, I've actually seen you post a lot of redhead stuff on Facebook, James, and I've noticed that. I see you're quite into the redheads. And fair.
Oh my God, you don't know the half of it. Really? I caught him jerking off to Harry Potter.
Whatever.
He's like, oh, Weasleys, I'm going to give you my wizard Weasleys.
Oh man.
I mean, like, my hair's actually blonde, but my two brothers are ginger, my mother's ginger. Stay away from my mother, James. That woman is 60, right? There has got to be like a song of that, doesn't there, James? Get away from me, ma. Maybe there is.
Dan's pissed pretty quick.
I would not be pleased. But actually, do you know what it comes out when the gene comes out in me? See, if I grow my beard too long, it starts to look quite ginger. And because it usually looks kind of blonde, like my head is. My hair's kind of that kind of dirty blonde, but like my beard's kind of a bit gingerish. But when it gets longer, it looks more ginger. And I remember one time, I'm a postman, so nobody get mental. Royal Mail is a private company in the UK. I've already said that to James.
Which is that's the best,
okay. Yeah. Private company. I'm not working for the government. So one time we were delivering mail and it was like snowing. It was like a proper blizzard. This was a few years ago. It's the worst snow we'd had in a while. And we were all stranded. And I'd gotten up and for some reason my beard looked extra ginger. And instead of saying, you know, because I met the two other guys that were doing delivering round about me and we were all stuck in this village. It was actually literally a village and we all had to walk quite far distances. And I was preoccupied about that because we basically told us, no vans coming, you need to get home yourself, it's all fucked, like, everything's in chaos. And the first thing when I saw the guys they went to is went, what the fuck's going on with your beard? Because it just looked really ginger. And then since then, there's been this running joke that you can tell how cold it is by how ginger Dan's beard looks. You know, it's like it gets more ginger when it gets cold. A ginger redhead, same thing. We call it ginger here most.
Yeah. I reserve ginger for a true redhead, and then, like, if you dye your hair, you're just a redhead. But, you know.
My big brother was talking about going to the thing they had in Red Square. They had a thing like where all these redheads got together and did a big thing, and my brother was talking about going to it, but he never went.
I would be there.
See, I love the South Park definition of a ginger. If you got the red hair and all the red freckles and everything, you're a ginger.
Yeah.
If you're just a redhead with no freckles, you're a daywalker.
Well, actually, my brothers are daywalkers. You would probably call that hair more auburn. I've seen that episode. I thought that episode was hilarious. Yeah, I feel like if you're a ginger with freckles, you've got no soul. I knew a guy who was the most ginger you'd ever seen. We were friends when we were kids, and he was the most carrot ginger you've ever seen, man. And then he just ended up dying his hair completely, like, but then he still had the ginger eyebrows for a while, and it didn't work.
Oh man,
did not end well.
So we've kind of touched on it, but the next thing I've got is on spirituality.
Oh, I love that.
I was sort of stalking your website, and that's another one of those things that kind of interests me that I like to talk about. So what are some of your thoughts?
Okay, well, I've made it quite clear that at one point I was in something called the Ordo Templi Orientis, which is a secret society. I've actually mentioned that in an essay and stuff. I've not made... It was a brief affiliation I had, and the guys were arseholes. But...
I was actually a Freemason, just...
Oh, were you? That was actually considered a branch of Freemasonry at one point, but then they were considered irregular because they were practicing ritual magic, and then they were considered irregular, you know, when things changed.
Oh, yeah.
But it was originally a brand, and I know a lot of people. I knew a guy in there once who was actually like a 32nd degree or something Freemason, but he looked like you would imagine it. He was a really intelligent guy, and he was like a masonry scholar, but like he was a big fuck off bodybuilder, like a big bald guy. Like, he actually was a bouncer, literally, and you wouldn't have believed it because I'm going to this occult meeting and I'm sort of looking around, like kind of worried about who's going to show up, and this big fucking guy. I'm like, who the fuck's this? Like, and he's like, oh yeah, and he starts talking about all these weird esoteric concepts, and I'm like, what the fuck's going on? But like, so spirituality is interesting. I grew up as a Catholic, and I was sent to Catholic school, the horrors of Catholic school, man. I'll tell you one thing I said when I was talking to Brett Vinot. I said that, like, I went to Catholic school and I went to take a philosophy course. When you get religious education, it's compulsory for like 5 years, like it's like high school, and then you can, you know, choose subjects. And then they said, well, instead of religious education, you can take philosophy. So I thought, ooh, philosophy, because I love philosophy. Yeah. And I did at that point. But then it turned out that we had two classes with two teachers. One was basically Catholic theology, and the other one was about Marxism. Literally about Marxism. But I'm getting a wee bit off the point. So yeah, my view was skewed about spirituality quite early on because of all this weird shit that I'd had to deal with. So like, I kind of got into a few things, you know, and I got into what's called Thelema, and that's like, so that's why I joined the OTO, or the Ordo Templi Orientis. I'm not a member currently. I was, and I had a few sort of initiations and whatnot. And I don't care if people say you're in the Illuminati, because the Illuminati hasn't existed since the 1700s. Grow the fuck up, right? And I was in it because I was kind of looking for something, and I went to a lot of Buddhist places and things. You know, we have a few sort of Buddhist retreats and sort of, you wouldn't call them, they call them temples, but they're sort of small buildings here. They're not exactly like what you would think of. There is one temple, but it's a wee bit out the way. So I went to a few of these Buddhist meetings, and I learned about meditation and things, and I got into a lot of interesting aspects of spirituality, because before I'd been brought up Catholic, and then I became a diehard atheist and a complete skeptic for all this. I just thought, this is all bullshit. There is nothing outside what I can see and experience. I became like a total empiricist, and that was it. And then, I don't know, I had started having these weird sort of feelings and dreams and stuff, and then I started meditating, and then a couple of things happened to me that I couldn't quite explain, and I still haven't been able to explain. I'm still not willing to say, you know, oh, all this stuff, but the conclusion I've come to sort of recently, for me, is that, like, we can look at the idea of God in many ways, and the idea of God is problematic because of what it brings up in a lot of people. But I kind of look at God, if you will, as, like, say, a totality of consciousness, if you want to put it that way. It's like a source of consciousness. So if you imagine, like a lot of people used to, like, so the sun is, like, the source of all consciousness, and every single ray is a different person, but it's still sort of connected to the source, but a long way away. And that's what I've kind of come to realize about spirituality. So that's kind of where I am on that, you know. I'm a proponent of reincarnation, and that's not just because of like the sort of Buddhist stuff and that. It's also because of, I mean, there's a lot of physics that actually back up the idea that consciousness could be separate from the body. There was this guy that wrote a book once, and he was like a neurosurgeon, and he had a near-death experience sort of thing, and he described it in such vivid detail, and then like he wrote a book, and then he analyzed his brain maps, and he said, I couldn't have been imagining that. That couldn't have been a dream. And every time when you see advances in modern physics, a lot of them seem to mirror things that like these old Buddhist sages and things said like hundreds of years ago, and even things Aleister Crowley said in the early sort of 1900s. And it's so interesting that like if you look at like modern physics, which there's so much shit that we can't explain, and I'm not saying that, oh, because we can't explain it, therefore God. You know, because yeah. I don't believe personally that there's a God that interferes in your life. That's just not me, you know. I'm not a deist, and I understand the deist position, and that is, whereas there was a God and he made stuff, set it into motion, and then just doesn't care, left it alone. The way I understand it, and this isn't what I think, this is what I understand from experience, because as, you know, if we're talking about Aleister Crowley, as Crowley said, experience will be your guide. And there's a lot of problems with Crowley, and he was a bad fucker, but like there were some things he got right. He was one of these weird people who had it kind of half right and half wrong, in my opinion. But like, you know, he said experience will be your guide, and that's the thing, because he even said, don't listen to me, man. Like, and the Buddha said that as well, you know. He said, don't listen to me, try it for yourself, and if it works, it works, if it doesn't, it doesn't. So I tried certain different things, meditational techniques and all this kind of thing, and I've come to some basic understandings, but I'd say there's still a lot to learn, you know, because I don't like to, I'm not, what I've realized about myself after the OTO is I'm not a joiner anymore. I used to be in political parties when I was younger, and then I joined the OTO, and I'm no longer a joiner of anything. I'm not joining anything anymore like that. Organizations, I'm not interested anymore, you know. I'm just me. And individuality now, you know.
I follow a similar sort of path. I never went to Catholic school, but somewhere in high school I became a Zen Buddhist, because that seemed to make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And then I went from Zen Buddhist to atheist, and then while I was in, so a year or two ago, I started going to AA because I was an alcoholic, and I sort of started questioning that and, you know, looking for some spirituality and you know, a higher power. So I don't know right now, but I'm not an atheist. I'm something. I'm still out there looking, you know, seeing what fits for me.
See, that's good. That's good that you're open, man. The fact is that that's what I like, because you get some people that aren't even open, because I'm still quite open myself, you know. I've got what I understand now, but I'm open to new ideas, new concepts, and new theories.
Yeah, I just, you know, and I've heard, you know, and I have a lot of listeners that are Christian, and they're all great people, you know. I have nothing bad to say about them.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember one time in like high school or something, there was a guy in there talking. He's like, when you're a Christian, you can think outside the box. When you're an atheist, you're trapped inside the box. And I was going, I don't think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of think, you know, and for years I refused to use the term atheist. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of atheists I saw were like, not so much that they didn't believe in a higher power, but that they hated the higher power. Like, oh, fuck him, he's an asshole, he didn't help me out with this problem. You're just like, people are like, the government sucks because they didn't help me out with this problem. You know, it was just like, I didn't see how there could exist one. You know, I just mentally, I didn't see how there could be such a thing.
Oh, totally. Because atheism is a belief system in itself, because that's what I realized when I was an atheist, because I realized that this is a belief system as well, because this is denying the existence of any other power. So it's still a belief system, just like, you know, any other religion is.
Yeah, and just the whole, like, some of the bashing that goes on between them, like, you know, like, deliberately being assholes to someone else because they think something different, instead of being, you know, inclusive and being like, okay, I don't believe what you believe, but, you know, I can understand you believe it, and that's your beliefs, and I can respect that.
Yeah.
There's so much like, fuck you because you don't believe what I believe. It just pisses me off.
I know exactly what you mean, and I hate that. And we get that. I mean, I get that a lot. I know I mean, I know some Christians that are great. I mean, one of a good friend of mine in work, he's even an evangelical Christian, but he's one of these guys that he's not like, he never pushes it on anyone. And even though he believes what he believes, he's actually fascinated by what I believe. Like, he's not just like, no, you shouldn't do that. You know, this is the Lord and stuff. You know, when I was actually getting into this occult stuff, he was genuinely interested. Me and him would sit and talk for hours about religion. And I remember the thing I said to him, because we would talk for ages. And the thing I really came to the conclusion of really is, because, like, I sort of believe in reincarnation, so I kind of think that we all start at the same place in the road. This will sound corny, but fuck it, who cares, right? We'll all start at the same place, right? And the roads are different. Some of them are longer, some of them are shorter. If you want to go Scottish, you attack the high road, and I'll attack the low road, and I'll be in Scotland before you, and all that kind of shit. But I could do it more Scottish if you want, but like the thing is, so it's all different roads. You'll start a different place, and some of them take longer, some of them are shorter. But I think in the end, we're all going to get to the same place.
Yeah,
beautiful. Yeah. Put it on a Hallmark card and sell that shit. Somebody's probably already said it. I don't know it.
Oh my god, anarchy cards. That's my next business.
Happy No Government Day. We'll just have No Government Day, or we'll just do it. We'll just fucking flout all the rules, and we'll just call it No Government Day.
I like that. The last thing I really have is just sort of a comment that I like to talk to a lot of people that I bring on that have, you know, started blogs or podcasts. I know myself, I've made a lot of really good friends and connections through starting the blog, you know, like you. Oddly enough, like one of our friends in common, Michael Dean.
Yes.
So when I found his work by looking up, he owns a website called like Punk Rock Anarchism or something. He has a link through there. And then I was you know, looking up his videos and stuff, and I was like, why does this motherfucker sound familiar? It realizes I owned his book. So years before that, me and Mike tried to make an independent film for a script I wrote. And he has a book called $30 Film School.
Yep.
And I was like, that's that same motherfucker. I kept going to these different genres, and he was always there no matter where I went. And I'm like, what? I assume you've made some great friends to the podcast, right?
Absolutely. It's really been good, because there's been like like some people, like, you know, some people kind of, you maybe talk to them and you interview them and it's all right, but you don't really sort of click on a way. So you,
right.
Yeah, no. And then you're kind of like, well, maybe talk to you again or whatever, or maybe I won't. But like, there's some people, you know, that you can just get on with, like we do, you know what I mean? You can just go on, we can just have a free flowing conversation, you know, and there doesn't need to be rigid notes or anything like that.
Yeah.
Oh, those are the best.
And the weird thing with us is Michael Dean had got in touch with us because we'd mentioned the Freedom Fiends on just some out of the blue Freedom Fiends mention. And then the next thing, because we were saying, Katie and I were kind of saying, well, maybe we could email Michael Dean and ask him to come on, or maybe he won't come on or whatever. And then one day, you know, an email just showed up from him, like I said earlier, saying like, I like your show. You guys are good. You're audio is fucking terrible, you know. And then he gave us some brief suggestions and some good ones, like, you know, if you don't have windscreens for your microphone, put tights on it first, you know, like. So that's what we started doing. We were sharing a mic at that point, and then at one point he was like, you know, he actually helped us. He actually went on the Amazon UK website and actually helped us pick out all the gear we'd need at good prices. And then he helped us set it up as well, because he does charge some people like for like audio consultancy, because he knows so much about it. But then you're kind of like, when we started making podcasts, we're like, right, we don't want to do it badly because we don't want to let him down. You know what I mean? So like, we're trying to figure out how the fucking mixer works. And we're like, we don't want him to have spent all this time helping us, because he helped us over Skype set up, and I was terrible. Like, do you know what it was like? I was like, you know, when you get toddlers and you see those wee toys and they've got like holes that are like one shaped like a square and one's a triangle, one's a circle, and the toddlers need to put the blocks in the right ones. Yeah, that's what I was like doing the mixer. Like, Michael Dean was the adult and I was like the toddler, and he was like, put the circle one in the circle, and I'm like touching all the buttons and shit on the mixer, and he's like, stop touching. He actually, I swear to God, he told me about it, stop touching things. You know, fucking listen to me, and I'm like, okay, I'm not touching anything anymore, because I just, I get too excited, and I was just like fucking hitting all the buttons and shit, and he's like, stop touching things. But that has really helped. But like, it's funny, because I used to hate Facebook, man. I'd never went on it before, because I just wasn't interested. And then when we started the podcast, we started getting in touch with different people, and we started doing interviews, and then I started taking off my Facebook friends all the people that I know that I don't like, that I'm bored with, and then, you know, adding, you know, but basically, yeah, but then, you know, and then, like, adding people that I like, and now, like, my Facebook thing just comes up with a lot of stuff that I'm interested in, that I'm actually interested in, you know, so it's changed in that way, and it's really good. It's been great for me and Katie to talk to people as well, because Katie's been quite shy. I used to play in bands and stuff, and as you can tell by the way I don't shut up, you know, I could talk, you know, I've been actually, you know, I always get told to stop talking and stuff, so it seems like actually there was actually a show we did on the Freedom Fiends, and I said I'm sorry for going on so much, and Michael Dean was like, you can tell Dan's new to talk radio because he's actually apologizing for talking so much. I mean, like, yeah, that's the whole point. But it's just, it's weird because Katie and I, we wanted to always do creative things. Like, and she had her art and stuff, and I used to be in bands. And then I sort of fell out of playing in bands and that kind of thing. And she kind of stopped her art and stuff. And we just started podcasting. And then once we started podcasting, then we started making music because we had a mixer and stuff, and we were like, well, fuck it. You know, now we've basically got a studio, let's do some music. So, you know, we'll start making music and stuff. And that's even brought us closer together as well. So not only have we met a lot of other people, even in the UK and in different places in the world, but not only that, that it's brought me and Katie closer together, the podcasting and stuff as well. And it's just been, it's been really good because it makes us feel less isolated, you know?
Yes.
And it's great, man. You know, I love the internet. Some people say, like, when would you like to be alive? I've heard this conversation in bars and things. People say, like, oh, would you love to be alive at this time or that time? And I'm like, right, yeah, fucking now, because we've got the internet. Do you know how hard it was, yeah, for those people to coordinate anything? It was a nightmare, but now we have the internet and we can just do this shit.
Yeah, I'm the jackass. Like, I grab all my friends by their collars and like, why don't you have a blog or a podcast, you fucker?
See, that's actually part of one of my big fears, that the only people that actually listen to podcasts are other podcasters.
I have had that fear.
Spinning our wheels, entertaining each other.
We're all following each other.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's becoming like a tight-knit community, though. Like, I remember listening to your interview on the Freedom Fiends where he was helping you with your audio, and Katie was fine, and he was like, Dan's too quiet. Dan, get closer! Okay. No, Dan, get closer! Turn Dan up, Dan's too quiet.
And the thing is, see, with Michael Dean, he tells you that stuff on the air. You know, like, there was one we did with me and Katie, and he was like, speak up, Katie, talk like you're talking on the radio. And yeah, Katie was like, I'm a strong, confident woman, and all this kind of thing. But the one of the funnier ones was a recent one I did with Michael and Davy Barker, and Davy was talking quite quietly, and he went, speak up, Davy, talk like you're talking on the radio. And Davy went, I am on the radio! Sort of a fucking live broadcast.
He's some sort of like weird special breed. Like, we were doing something one time where I reviewed one of his DVDs he made, mm-hmm, and then someone was like hot linking my image for like an anti like gun site, mm-hmm, so I changed it to like a picture of a dick or something, you know, just to fuck them over. And he was like, "You gotta do this," and he was like emailing me back and forth. His email account was like blocking my emails or something, and he used his Google Foo, and then like my phone started ringing, and I'm like, I don't know this number. And I answered, he's like, hey, this is Michael W. Dean. I'm like, holy shit. Like, how do you have my number? He's like, it's on the internet, bro. I found it.
Yeah, the man is a pro. He sometimes calls himself the libertarian NSA.
Yeah.
Because yeah, one time I was looking at the Fiend site, and he sent me an email going, I see you're looking at the Fiend site.
Yeah.
But like, he's cool though, because if he's one of those guys that if he's recording, he'll tell you, like, because, you know, we talk, we're doing live during the breaks, and sometimes he records the banter in between the breaks, sometimes he doesn't, but he never does it without telling you. Like, he'll say, like, I'm recording now, so, you know, like, yeah, he never bugs you because he hates that, because, like, that's something he always talks about that pisses him off when people record, like, conversations without telling the other person. This isn't recorded, isn't it? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I usually turn off the recording. Like, and I'll, you know, when I get done with the podcast, like, okay, I'm turning it off now. You know, and then we can talk about, like, you know, dick jokes and whatever for a while. And another thing I had to say was, you know, you're talking about, you know, talking, you know, interviewing people, and, you know, some people, you know, like us, we're having a good conversation. There's lots of good flow. Me and Mike have interviewed a couple people where it's like you're poking them with a stick and like, give me more fucking stuff.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and you're just like dragging them along like tooth and nail.
And I tell you, if you ever want to hear just such an interview, find this one podcast called Pork Therapy. And
first interview.
Yeah, find where they interviewed him. I listened to that and I was laughing and cringing the whole time because this woman was dragging fucking words out of his mouth, tooth and nail.
Yeah. I'm a little more comfortable behind the mic now, but Stephanie broke my, like, podcast virginity.
So, I mean,
terribly.
I don't remember what got said verbatim, but it was basically stuff like this. So, James, I understand that you're into survival and the punk lifestyle. Yes.
Oh, God. I've had interviews like that, but before I talk about them, I just want to say that, like, I actually found out about survival punk from the Freedom Fiends because it was an advert one time. I was driving my van at work and I was listening to the Fiends. You know, you shouldn't listen to headphones, but fuck it. And like a survival punk episode came on. And like we tried to look for sort of UK preppers because we thought, because, you know, we'd watch stuff like me and Katie do a bit of prepping ourselves and stuff. You know, not much, but we do a bit, like, put it this way, we could get by. And we were kind of looking for someone to talk to about that, and no one seemed to fit. And we, like, even emailed a couple of people in the UK, and they were just, like, not our, we listened to their stuff, and they were like, they're not our type of people. And then I heard this this advert, and I was like, well, I understand completely the punk DIY ethic. I've used it all my life, you know, and stuff. And then I got onto your site, and I started listening to your things, and I was like, to Katie, we've found someone we can actually talk to about this shit now. Finally, you know what I mean? So we looked through a lot of prepping podcasts, but we couldn't find someone that we thought we could really do a show with, you know, like, that would get our kind of weirdness. So that's actually how we found you, through the Freedom Fiends. Which is kind of funny.
Which is awesome. Yeah.
They were looking for the right brand of weirdness, and they found us.
Yeah, I noticed, like, when I started Survival Punk, I was like, there's nobody in this space like me. There's no tattooed, younger, punk rock people talking, you know, preparedness. So I'm like, they're all crusty old dudes, you know, that are just not me. And I'm like, I think...
You're like, I want to listen to me, damn it.
Yeah, I'm like, surely there's going to be one or two people out there that'll dig my kind of survival. If not, then, you know, hell, I'm having fun. Screw everybody.
But yeah, isn't that the same as, like, what I was saying earlier about how I had to start my own damn show? Because I was like, maybe there'll be someone that's interested in my brand of weirdness. And because we do talk about, you know, a lot about libertarianism and stuff like that. But if you talk about the non-aggression principle and shit every day, all day, every day, it gets boring and, you know, nobody wants to listen anymore. So that's why we do weird shows about, we branch out, man, because you can find the sort of individualistic concept and fairy tales and stuff. We've been doing stuff with that, you know, like an old kind of European fairy tales, the whole individualistic sort of drive is in them. So we do things like that. We try and take it to more interesting places because you don't want to hear someone whinging about this politician did this week and they passed this bill and I'm really fucked off and let's talk about the implications of the non-aggression principle for this bill. It gets boring after a while. It gets to be the same thing. You need to mix it up a bit, do you know what I mean? Do some different stuff. Make it fun.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Highly agree. I don't know. You said you don't spend much time on Facebook, but I remember that Facebook post you talked about where you're like, I'm just going to start deleting motherfuckers that, you know, are jackasses and, you know, socialists and whatever. Because I think I commented on it. I've got some friends that are like, they post retarded stuff. Like, I had a friend that posted, yes, victory, for the net neutrality shit. And I was like, how do you balance, like, the non-aggression principle wanting to slap the fuck out of people? Like, And I end up, oddly enough, because I'm still in the dating scene, I keep end up dating,
like, really liberal girls. Why is that funny, Mike?
I keep just ending up with, like, super liberal-ass girls, and it's like...
Oh, that's like...
yeah, it's, I, you know, and it's... It sucks. The last one was, like, talking about how Obama's, like, State of the Union speech was the greatest thing ever, and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to see you ever again. You're stupid.
Well, let me tell you something about Katie. Katie and I got married we knew each other at school. We first met in a biology class. It was by an accident we got seated together because our names were similar in the register, and this teacher wanted to, you know, have everyone alphabetically. It was one of those guys. And then we were friends, and we had the same circle of friends, and then, like, we saw each other and all that, and I went out with a lot of different girls and stuff, and she moved to Sri Lanka, and she came back. We got together, blah, blah, blah. The whole point is that when we got together and we get married, we were very young. I was 21, she was 22, so it was very early, actually, really early to get married and, like, have a house and a mortgage and all this kind of thing, but that's what we were doing. But what was funny is I was very kind of socialist in that, and I was really into politics and stuff, and I used to be in political parties and things, and then I kind of became disillusioned after a while, and Katie was always like, just leave me alone, I'm not interested in this kind of shit, I'm not bothered about it. She was always a natural libertarian, but I didn't know it, and she didn't have the words for it, and then I started to get into sort of anarchism and libertarianism and this kind of thing, and then I started talking to Katie, and she'd never, and the whole time I'd known her since she was 15 years old, the whole time I'd known her, she'd never been interested in politics, and then, well, I say politics, but political thought is what I mean, if you want to put that, political philosophy. And then when she started hearing about libertarianism and things like that, she started to get interested. And Bill Bupert, if you know Bill Bupert, he runs ZeroGov.com, he talks about how his wife was the same, was a natural, just an instinctive libertarian, didn't have the words, but then when it was presented with the theory, I immediately was like, yeah, that's how I feel, man. Doesn't that know how you feel? You know, like, and then, yeah, and then that brought us actually closer together on that level, because she was always an anarchist and a libertarian, because she was always fighting against things, and I was always trying to work within for years, and it's kind of like she knew something for a long time, and it took me a lot of going to things and joining things and doing things, and I actually went around people's doors for political parties, handing out leaflets and talking to people and shit. And now when I think about that, I think, what a waste of my fucking time. I could have been doing anything else. Anything else.
You would have been more productive masturbating, for God's sake.
I would have been, yeah.
Oh, man.
This could have been a hell of a lot funner.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah, because let me tell you, man, that was fucking that's the most depressing thing I've ever done in my life. See, putting, I was a teenager at the time and I was idealistic, and see, putting a rosette, like, sort of on yourself and chapping people's doors who don't give a fuck. Actually, we were in this bad neighborhood. Seriously, this guy was arguing it, like, what might have been his wife or his girlfriend or his baby's ma or something like that, right? It was someone that was connected to him, and he saw a lot of people that were kind of smartly dressed with rosettes chapping people's doors, and he came out and he had started running after us going, get the fuck out of here, and he had, like, something in his hand, and it was like a blunt object, like a stick or something, but I couldn't see what it was, but we all bolted, and this is me and a load of, like, older people and a couple of younger idealistic idiots like me, and we're all running to the fucking car. And then after, like, the next day, we're like, so we're going out canvassing again, and, like, everyone was like, we're not going up then again, none of us, nah, fuck that, we'll go somewhere else, we'll go to the next part of fucking town, we're not going there again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's how bad it was. The cunt actually chased us. It's something, I dropped the C word, that's kind of normal here. I don't know how you feel about that in your podcast, feel free to edit it out, but that C word is sort of normal here. You call your friends like...
you
can't say cunt on our fucking podcast.
Yeah.
We're not down with the bad fucking language.
We say that on our podcast. Like, you'll hear... I hear loads of people say that here. We say, like, oh, I'm going out with those cunts, like, and they're your friends.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the UK Scotland versus American views on the word cunt.
Yeah,
yeah. It's sort of taboo over here. Like, people that's the worst word in the world. Oh my god,
you get lynched by a shit ton of pissed off cunts over here if you say it.
Yeah, which is why I use that term to describe one of my exes. That's her. It's like, that's her name.
You mean cunt Brittany?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I use as my bad word
while
I'm driving.
Oh my god!
No, here it's. I've heard loads of people that you talk about your friends like that. You say, "Ah, me and these cunts are going out to a pub or something," you know, and that's just sort of normal here. But, like, it's kind of more liberal, the use of the word cunt here.
Yeah.
Oh my god! When I really want to insult somebody over here, and I'm going to use the word cunt, I just flat out say, they're an American cunt.
No, they're not the charming British UK. Oh, you fucking cunt. No. They're not any of that. They're the dirty American fucking cunt.
Yeah. You should do it. You should go, you're a cunt. Oh, I'm sorry. I've been in Europe. So, I was using the European meaning of that term.
Oh, that makes it fine.
Oh, God. And speaking of that, yeah, I've got a segment I just added called Mike's Special Request.
Ooh. Goodness.
Now I am going to offer Dan, if it's okay with you, 4 weeks of free advertising for his site and podcast on our show.
Oh my! See,
yeah,
serious?
four weeks of free
That's
stuff.
Recorded, so you can't take us back.
And I don't edit anything, for God's sake.
All you have to do.
Sorry, Mike.
Now, the only thing you have to do to win these 4 weeks, you win 1 week for each of these special requests.
Oh, no.
I'm going to give you a word or phrase, and I just want you to say it, okay?
Okay.
Just repeat it. First word to win your first week of free advertising, coffee.
Coffee.
Okay. Now, for the second week of free advertising, watermelon.
Watermelon.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. You sound pretty American saying that.
Right.
Watermelon, really? Watermelon. So watermelon. Watermelon.
Oh, I'll explain afterwards.
Okay. All right. Wait, what?
Okay. Now, to win your third week of free advertising, repeat the following phrase that I co-opted from an episode of Doctor Who.
Okay.
I'm Scottish. I can complain about things.
I'm Scottish. I can complain about things.
Okay, and I might just, and if you do this one good, I might just give, might just bump it up to 5 weeks of free advertising.
Aye, mate.
Okay. Just repeat this, and try to sound a little bit more excited about this one.
Okay, right, I'm buzzed, right, I'm jazzed, right, okay.
All right. Okay, here it goes. Captain, I'm giving her all she's got. If I give her any more, the whole thing's gonna blow.
I know what you want, and I'm gonna do it my way, you know. Captain, I'm giving her all she wants, but the whole thing's gonna blow. I missed a bit out, or was that, did that work?
That's great.
That is 5 weeks of free advertising on our show.
Do you know what? See, I was saying this on The Fiends as well. See, when I go to America, I get way more Scottish, man. I do. Like, I've been to America and Canada a few times, and, like, I get, like, see, when I'm there, I'm here, I talk like this, you know, and I'm quite coherent. But when I get there, for some reason, when I hear thick accents, I get thicker, and I'm like, all right, aye. Who's it going?
Oh, my God. I do the same thing anytime I travel, even just outside of the southern part of the United States. If I go up north, all of a sudden everything sounds like this. I don't know why, but I just start ringing out the southern drawl.
Oh, my God. So the watermelon thing, Dan, the store I used to work at, there was a girl that she was like sort of half British, so like her dad was British, and he came over here. And she had some like weird amalgamation accent, like, so sometimes she was sounding like super British. Mm-hmm. And the way she said watermelon was like incomprehensible. It was like, what did you say?
Watermelon.
Yeah, I was like, that's what? Is that even a word?
So you know what's so funny, a lot of people don't realize, is Katie's actually Canadian. Katie was born in Vancouver, and she lived there till she was 12, and then she moved to Scotland because her dad was from Vancouver and her mum was Scottish. But because she's been here so long, she talks quite Scottish too. Like, if she's talking to me or someone else, she talks quite Scottish. But when we went to Canada on our honeymoon, and even if I hear her talking to her dad, it's so funny because she flips into this Canadian accent, like, without even trying. It's like she doesn't realize she does it, but she goes back and forward because, like, she had her childhood in Vancouver and then she moved to Glasgow, and it's like she sort of flips in and out sometimes, and it's she says certain words. She doesn't quite say a boot. She's not although she'll argue that it's not a boot, it's a boat. And I have asked her several times to apologize for Celine Dion, but she still refuses. She refuses.
Oh, my God. At least get her to apologize for Justin Bieber.
Is he Canadian?
He's Canadian.
Yeah, he's Canadian. I wish they'd take him back.
I did not know that. I thought he was American. I apologize. Oh, sir.
I give you that mistake only one time.
Hey, that's a one go, Mike. I am very sorry. You know what's funny? I saw a comedian once, right? I saw this comedian once, and he was in Scotland. And he said, so I'm from Canada. I hope you won't get offended by this because it's just a joke. So please don't. Maybe I shouldn't tell this joke. I'll just tell it anyway. Fuck it. Right. No, so like, please don't get offended. But he said, I'm from Canada. And he was in Scotland, obviously. And he's like, does anyone know what it's like to have a nation of... No, in fact, sorry. Wait, I'm getting it wrong. We'll start again. He was in England. Right. And he said, I'm from Canada. Does anyone know what it's like to have a nation of arrogant bastards living below you? Anyone from Scotland?
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
I messed it up at first, but I got back in the end, you know, as long as I get it back at the end, that's okay with that.
Similar but different. Yeah. I was watching a comedian here in Tennessee one time, and he went on this rant about, like, short people. Like, he had this whole little bit about, like, short, and I was there with my buddy Gabriel. And he's like 5'8", 5'7"-ish.
And he's the tallest one in his family.
Yeah. And it was like, he's like, I don't care what you little people out the audience think. He's like, manhood starts at 6 foot. I'll meet you all out in the alley afterwards and just put my hands on your head and you can't hit me. And my friend was sitting there just like grumpy. Like, he was just like, I hate this guy.
Oh my God.
Either way, I know a guy in my work, and I'll tell you, man, this guy is a small guy, but you would not fuck with him, man. He would kick the shit out of you. Funny, like, because I'd started there, and I wasn't in there that long, and someone had, like, banged something against him, and I thought, this little guy over there. And then, see, he was like, wait, you! See you, you fucking old fucking dick! And he was actually saying to the guy, this is in a workplace, man. He's like, I'll take you outside! Like, as I'm going to take you outside, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. And then, just to give you an idea of a working class Scottish workplace, my boss comes out of his office, fucking slams the door, like slams the door open, and then kind of, if you know what I mean, and then kind of goes like, you, in my fucking office right now. We could hear the boss shouting at them, going like, don't you fucking say that again, there's no fucking fighting in here. Like, oh, what the fuck? Like, so the bosses were aggressive than the two of these guys, and then it was all resolved, and they never said a word to each other. It was just...
Probably fucking terrified.
That's the way workplaces should
that's
be.
That's how you should manage. You should just come out all angry, you know, because he came out with a fucking... I think he was having a bad day anyway, and he was just like, in my fucking office! And then we all beat him out on the floor, and we were like, say nothing, man, just let it go. As long as no one kills each other, we're doing well.
Oh, God. Well, this has been a fucking blast. So how can people keep up with you and whatnot?
Yeah, you can go to Greening Out Podcast. I used to always say greeningoutpodcast.co.uk, but a lot of people actually, I know I just say the .com, so greeningoutpodcast.com. You can get us there. We're Katie and I are part of the Rotating on a Spit, as Michael Dean says, co-hosts on the Freedom Fiends, freedomfiends.com. We also post at attackthesystem.com, which is run by Keith Preston. That's like a sort of pan-anarchist site. I'm sure you probably know about it. We are co-editors there. We publish some of our stuff there too. So you can find us at all those locations, but the main one is greeningoutpodcast.com.
All right, and I'll have links in the show notes and whatnot. So I'm going to go ahead and end the podcast. Right now. I am an Antichrist. I am an Anarchist. Don't know what. Bye, cause I